Hey, welcome to Farthest Galaxy Star Wars Podcast. I'm your local scruffy looking Nerf Herder Hunter, and as always, I'm joined by Jedi Master Alex.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm eating food today.
Yeah, well, we just got out of the gym. It's a little bit later today. We needed to get some food on the way back, so yeah, man. We're rocking that vibe. We stink, we're tired, and we're doing this podcast.
Hell yeah, dude. That's the way we like to live.
It's the only way we live.
Sneaky tired and doing Star Wars stuff.
That's the play, man.
This week we're going to be covering Tales of the Jedi. First canonical bit of it, not the first volume. We're covering Golden Age of the Sith, which is a precursor to Fall of the Sith Empire, which came out in 94. This one's 96.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I noticed that when I was looking over it. I was like, did we do the wrong one? I'm like, no, it's the first in the timeline.
I got timeline, man. I do timeline stuff. It's way easier to keep track of it.
I was like, did we fuck up?
Because if we read it all, we know what we covered because, oh, we already did that. It's back in time. We just messed up Mace Windu because one of the lists I was looking at differed from the other one, and then
It's just randomly there. We just have it.
Yeah. We're supposed to do Obi-Wan first, then that one.
It's okay. We did it.
We got Son of Dathomir coming up, though. So, be on the lookout for that.
Looking forward to that one.
I'm going to be fire. I've actually never read that one.
That episode's going to be like 2 hours.
I'm going to tell the cool shit. This one, let's hope it's not 2 hours, but still a good book. So,
look at the time code right now and tell us how long it is.
So, before we get to that, though, we got some news. Let's talk about the small stuff first and hit the last two big ones later. So, Star Wars YouTube, Star Wars Kids, I believe, put out a new show called Galaxy of Creatures, similar to Galaxy of Adventures, but it focuses on the weird little creatures in the universe. It's cool. Not a little kid thing.
I'll have to look at it after this.
It actually looks pretty clean.
I haven't seen it yet. You were talking to me about it this morning, and I was like, Hugs looks and Pats?
Pretty clean.
You're like, no, that's the difference. Galaxy that's sounds. The other way.
Hugs and Pats, dude.
I was like, dude, what?
Galaxy sounds okay.
This Galaxy of thing that they're starting to do is actually kind of peeving me.
Why?
I just think it's annoying.
Galaxy of Adventures, Galaxy of Sounds, Galaxy of Creatures.
It's like, you guys realize there are other words for space,
Galaxy
right?
Heroes.
They're like, but if it's on Galaxy, far,
we
far
have our
away.
One pocket episode that we'll talk about at some point. Galaxy Heroes, baby. Mm-hmm.
For any Galaxy Heroes fans out there, you already know that it's going to be mostly negative.
Fans is a strong word.
Okay, players. Mm. Speaking of Galaxy Heroes, new bounty hunter Asajj Ventress coming.
Oh, that's dope, actually.
Pretty sick.
We needed a better...
It's going to be the later season.
She'll probably be an unassigned Jedi-aligned user.
Unaligned Force user, yep. But she won't have the Bounty Hunter tag. Like Beskar Mando.
She should have Bounty Hunter tag.
This is not our Galaxy of Heroes episode, in case you were wondering.
So, next little bit of news. The new Star Wars High Republic comic book, Halcyon Legacy.
Halcyon.
Halcyon, that's how you pronounce it? Never knew that.
That is the word.
Halcyon Legacy, it actually ties into the Disney Star Cruiser... Starship Cruiser, like,
that's
cruise
cool.
Or something.
Yeah, because apparently they're going to start letting people into that place, I think, at the end of the month.
Yeah, and it ties into the High Republic, which I think is cool, because they're finally doing something.
It is the end of the month. I think it started yesterday that they're allowing people in. I got to look this up, because I want to see what it looks like inside.
You'll probably be able to see what it looks like outside when you're there.
Well, the hotel is a little bit away from the park. Yeah, I'm not going to the hotel.
Big tab.
Fuck that.
Because it's stupid expensive, and you have to, like, stay 2000, in there.
I don't even know if you're allowed to, like, walk in the lobby without, like, you're supposed to be there. Like, that's how...
That's a whole story.
That's how, like, sus it is, you know? Like, they got people, like, checking you at the front door. Like, are you supposed to be in this hotel? It's like, I just want to see the lobby. Are you supposed to be in the hotel? Okay, guess I'm leaving.
Because it's an immersive, interactive experience. If someone breaks your immersion, they failed.
Yeah, what they do is, I read about this months ago. They want to have a shuttle that, like, I guess docks... as it were, at their little station or whatever, and it's a special bus that's only for the hotel, and it's designed to look like a starship. So when you're looking out the windows, it's one of those, like, videos where you're not really seeing what's outside, you're seeing, like, all the other crap, yeah.
Which is
and it'll shuttle you right to the park and let you out in the park. Like, you won't have to walk through the thing. But that's the thing about staying at this hotel is they already know that you have tickets to go to the park because you have to buy the park tickets when you're buying this hotel stay. It's pretty sus. I want to go really bad, but I'm not going to have money to do that anytime soon.
Well, I'll do that eventually.
Yeah, when we're like 30.
we got the four of us to do it. So it's cool that they're tying the High Republic into something that's canonical. Well, not canonical, but something that's like live action for people who won't read the comics to finally sink their teeth into. Because we're still waiting on that Acolyte show, which is supposed to be like close to the High Republic timeline. Introducing
I think it's supposed to be 100 years before the Phantom Menace. Yeah. I believe that's what they said. And in that time, the only Sith that we would know about, or dark side, that guy that we would know about, would be Plagueis.
Or Revan.
Revan is not alive in that time.
Oh, okay.
I think that's like 3,000 or 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm. And maybe 100.
Palpatine, we don't know how old he is. I assume he's probably like 40 come the first movie.
So he says his master is Darth Plagueis, but what if it's him reincarnated in a new body? Just saying.
There's a lot of things we don't know about Palpatine's backstory because the Plagueis novel was made on canon. Yeah. So they could do anything.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I hope that's not the case. That would be so stupid.
Actually, I killed my apprentice and took his body, and then I've been living through him now.
Have you ever heard the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
It's me.
I'm about to retcon the shit out of
him. Next little bit. I'll just...
That's a really bad way to phrase that.
What?
Read number 5. Just read it.
Yeah, I wrote it real quick because that's not, you know, we'll get there. Rumor has it that Disney wants to animate a version of George Lucas's original script, which was adapted by Dark Horse.
Cool.
The Star Wars, where Han Solo has a lightsaber and Luke is a girl and C-3PO looks like a prostitute bot and R2-D2 is like a big silver box. Darth Vader's a legit samurai.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them doing it. They bought everything that he would have had rights to, so it wouldn't even matter at this point.
Oh, dude, it's really cool. Like, the concept figures are what it would come from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that concept Starkiller I have at the office, or the Han Solo.
Luke Starkiller.
Cool. I'd be so interested
Anakin
in doing that.
Starkiller. I forget which one it was.
Yeah. This ties into the first bit of news, where Disney is rumored to be working on 4 anime projects. They specifically say anime and not animated.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's the same thing, but you know what I mean.
It's not the same thing.
Well, anime stands for animation.
Anime is it's a style Japanese animation. Exactly. That's what it is.
Yeah. And the Ninth Jedi director has proposed a story and continuation for a features film/series. Is this one of the projects?
I hope.
Question mark.
I would hope.
A Star Wars anime series would be a missed opportunity, seeing the success of Visions.
Absolutely.
So they want to do 4 animated projects, not specifically Star Wars. They just want to do 4 anime projects. And we know one of them is, it's called like Twisted Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a high anime high school, and like the villains are like hot anime boys, and they represent like different Hogwarts houses of like villainy. It's supposed to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
So Twisted in Wonderland or something like that. It's supposed to be the first bit of anime that we're going to get from Disney. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do get something Star Wars related. I could see Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, and then up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because why not capitalize? What If did so great. Why not do it in Marvel anime? They did look up Future Avengers in 2017. They did pretty well.
We both said that we'd be into it. We both want it.
Yeah,
and I'll take anything.
Yeah, and if they adapt it into the Ninth Jedi, that would be sick. Because, like they said, the director said that they have a continuation to either make it into a series or into a feature film. They have a beginning, middle, and end for that story that they started. That'd be sick.
Yeah, no, I'm all for it 100%. I was a little iffy on Visions before it came out. And it came out, and I was still kind of like, do I like this?
We talked about
it. I was like, this is good, right? Yeah, I was like, this is good. And now, you know, I can confidently say that I do like Star Wars Visions, and I would be down just to see anything else in that vein or something similar to that. You know, it's a whole realm of possibilities that Star Wars didn't really touch up until this point, so it's cool. You know, the closest we got was like the Clone Wars Genndy cartoons, right? Genndy.
Yeah.
I don't know any other like Star Wars anime thing other than like the figure arts that come out. So... Yeah, I'm all for it. I'm down to see that.
Yeah, then we got the Ben Presto statues they announced today.
Yeah, those look cool.
They got the two. They got the twins and they got the Ronin. The Ronin from the duel.
Mm.
He looks cool. The other two look mid.
Kare and Am.
Yeah, I'm gonna get probably that Ronin one because the Ben Presto ones don't cost that much. They're usually around $40 at max.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Deku and Ida I have from over there.
I don't know if I'm gonna get any of them.
I just like the Ronin guys.
I like the Ronin. I'm very particular about the statues and the figures and things that
I'm
buy.
A big statue guy.
It has to really like be something that I want. I like Ronan. I think he's really cool. He's not really anything to me.
Though, you're waiting for Padawan Dan.
I'm like, whatever. Yeah, Padawan Dan. hit me with the Padawan Dan figures.
I really would want both of them.
I want a $500 Bring Arts Padawan Dan.
But it's him laying on the ground because he got stabbed.
Yeah, he's got stabbed. It's over.
Got a stab wound. It's and he's like, oh, is he dead? Oh, no, he's not.
I want the old man, but when he turns into rocks.
And then he blows his ship up.
I'm actually going to go outside, get a pile of rocks, paint them black, and then be like, look, it's him.
It's my elder statue.
It's my elder statue. Do you guys love this? I'll glue some rocks together.
This is pretty smart.
It is. See, I got the strats, man. I'll sell them on Etsy. I'll sell them in my Etsy shop. Elder statue post-duel. In parentheses.
All right. Last bit of news. We got Anakin Skywalker showing up in Ahsoka the Show.
That is much better than what you wrote here.
Anakin in Ahsoka.
Yeah.
So it's... Now, almost confirmed, like 100%.
It is confirmed.
Oh, it is 100%.
Yeah. I think Rosario Dawson on her Twitter said, they know now, Sky Guy. I'll see you whenever, you know.
So Anakin, Hayden Christensen, is showing up in the Ahsoka show. Kind of figured as much, yeah. Personally.
Especially because he's going to be in Kenobi. Yeah. And they're probably filming the shows like next to each other, yeah. If not in the same studio, just at different times.
And I feel like they could easily have gotten Rosario Dawson to show up briefly in Kenobi, even if it's like for 2 seconds. And or in a Clone Wars flashback.
I still think there's a very real possibility. We see Ahsoka in the Kenobi show. I don't know in what capacity, but...
But at some point.
It could be. Yeah. Really could be.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Kenobi... Clone Wars flashbacks in both of those shows. Kenobi and Ahsoka. God.
Obi-Wan, Captain Rex, and Ahsoka all reminiscing about Anakin.
In live action.
Give it to me!
Tamora Morrison is on the payroll again.
Inject it into my veins!
Tamora's on the payroll again, man. That's all I'm saying.
Put it in my button. Pull the trigger.
That's all I'm saying. So... What we have potentially in the Ahsoka show is either Clone Wars flashbacks, similar to what we were predicting about Kenobi, or him as a Force Ghost, because this takes place after Episode 6, and Hayden is now
Force Ghost.
Makes the most sense personally, because they never got to finish their journey
spoilers
together.
Spoilers for anybody who hasn't listened to our Rebels episode or watched Rebels, they have some reconciling to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if it'll be the first time that they're speaking that we're seeing it, but I definitely think we're going to have some moments of her being like, you know, when you were Darth Vader, that really sucked. And he was like, I agree. It did really suck.
But now I'm cool.
But now I'm not Darth Vader. So because
my son got
me. So let's just stop talking about it.
Mm.
But I'm excited. I don't want to speculate too much about what it could be because...
It's literally one of those two things.
It could go in like a fucking million directions realistically with what you want that to be like, you know?
Flashback.
It's like, what is that? Like, what a Clone Wars flashback, you know? Where in the Clone Wars does that fit?
Plo
we got
Koon's
a whole
alive,
show with them,
Filoni.
Right? It's like, what does that look like, you know? There's too many
live action Clone Wars would be amazing.
Just know that we are very excited for these live action shows, and we are definitely going to be covering them, like, when they come out.
Boba Fett. We might cover that week by week. We'll just cover each episode.
Sorry, everybody, we know you like this differentiated content, but we gotta watch Obi-Wan. And Ahsoka.
And Book of Boba.
And Book of Boba.
And Mando Season 3.
And talk about it.
And everything.
We're going to be talking about new stuff like every week. It's going
to
be great.
Yeah, we're going to actually be up to date on everything. At least as far as I want to do it.
You guys are going to love it. We're going to hate it. It's going to be great.
Basically. All right. Anything else you want to talk about in the news that I got set up?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything.
I didn't
everything,
want to step on your toes if you had anything you wanted to say. I'm trying to move through that quickly.
I think we got everything. I don't know anything else that happened in Star Wars this week.
Sounds good. Works for me. And this is some toys, but whatever.
Yeah, toys are toys.
The
people
the
who like toys.
Rosario Dawson Star Wars Ahsoka toys coming out soon. Vintage collection first. Black Series when?
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that actually on the website. I was like, oh, new Ahsoka. That's cool. Yeah,
hopefully, Black Series comes out with the Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about the publication history for Tales of the Jedi Golden Age of the Sith. Yes. So. Ahem. Tales of the Jedi, Golden Age of the Sith, is a sub-series of Tales of the Jedi series of comics published by Dark Horse Comics. It's written by Kevin Anderson, and published by, penciled by Dario Carrasco.
Sure.
It ran from July 1996 to February 1997, then it was compiled into a trade in August. It tells the story...
That's right, folks, we're prior to the prequels.
Damn it, way into it. It tells the story, and they don't even call it before.
They don't. They
before
call it,
Star
they call
Wars 4.
BSW4. When I saw the timeline, I was like, isn't that BBY?
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there, and I looked up the publication history. I was like, oh, shit. This came out before the prequels were even a thing. Mm. They didn't have a BBY because they didn't need one.
Yep.
Because the only thing that was BBY back then was Star Wars.
Was the first episode.
The first fucking movie.
And even then they called it Star Wars 4, which I think
Yeah, they called
it
Star Wars 4.
Because they knew it was up.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the story leading up to the Great Hyperspace War, as well as the final battle in the Unification Wars of the Kuros system. Yes. And there is an Issue Zero. Yay, we like that.
I am going to blow through the synopsis for all 5 issues in one shot. So you can interject whenever you'd like. I'll cover my notes about the comic as a whole after the fact, and the little things I have for each issue. I just really want to get this out of the way, to be honest. Because I don't think a lot of you guys are going to be overly interested in this story. It's not like the Dawn of the Jedi, where there was a little bit more intrigue. This is kind of boring. Because
it's just
real.
A prequel to something that happened earlier in the timeline.
Yeah,
not timeline, but...
Like, Force Storm, it felt like it was cool, and they had a lot of cool shit going on, a lot of cool concepts. This is like, we have cool concepts, but we don't want to go very far into them. We're just going to take it as the surface and enjoy it.
At the beginning of the episode, we said this is actually a prequel. It's a prequel to Fall of the Sith Empire.
Which I believe is like 10 years after this.
Yep.
So it's like, what is even going to happen? Yeah. So we'll cover that when we get there, and hopefully it'll be a lot more enjoyable. But until then, let's just jump into this. So there was actually something. I took this word for word from the beginning of Issue Zero, just as like a setup for it, and I'll read that now. The complete history of the Old Republic would fill 1,000 libraries, but some events, some sacrifices have become legend, passed from generation to generation. The epic of the Great Hyperspace War, how the bold explorations of young Gav and Jori Daragon brought two galactic empires crashing together, how Odin Ur became a powerful Jedi and eventually a master, and how the seven worlds of the Koro system were finally united by the wise and skilled Empress Teta. 5 millennia before the birth of Luke Skywalker and the fall of Palpatine's empire, 1,000 years before Exar Kun and Ulic Keldroma joined forces in a sweeping conflagration known as the Sith War.
That's like legacy stuff,
I think. The story begins. Yeah, that's like old, old stuff. Yeah. All right, y'all. Here we go. Buckle the fuck in. Odin Ur, a male Jedi historian, Drathos on Ossus, has completed his Jedi training. Odin Ur is interested in ancient lore, particularly the history of the Sith. He's familiar.
Us.
He is. He's literally us. He just doesn't podcast. He is familiar with the first great schism, the 100-year darkness, and the dark Jedi exiles who established the Sith Empire. Deemed ready, Odin Ur is sent by his master Uru to fight on the planet Sinagar in the Koro system. Oh, Hoke and his wife Timar Daragon work as supply runners for the benevolent Hut Araba, who owns Arba a repair dock. Their children Gav and Jori, who I mentioned at the top, want to accompany their parents for a supply run to the rebel-held planet of Kerrick. However, Hawk refuses since it's too dangerous.
Well, it's good that they didn't.
Yeah, for sure. Since Arba is keeping their ship Starbreaker 12 as collateral, the couple departs in the Shadowrunner. Meanwhile, Odin Ur meets with his fellow Jedi, Mehmet Nadil, who serves as Empress Teta's Jedi advisor.
These names are much worse than like they could have ever been.
They really are. I mean, Gav and Jori aren't terrible, but...
They're pretty Star Wars-y.
Like what the... Mehmet Nadil? Like, come on.
Odin Ur.
Odin Ur. That's better than the Tusken Raider, whose name is Ur.
Like, oh, no. The Galaxy Heroes, baby.
Oh, gosh. The Empress has unified 6 of the 7 worlds in the Koro system through mutual commerce and aid. However, the pirates and rebels of Kurek have rebuffed all attempts and have been raiding ships. The rebels are still besieging their advanced contingent and have slaughtered 50 Tetan hostages in retaliation for their last rescue.
Oh, no!
Everyone listening to this is like, I'm sorry, could you try that again, but in English? While Odin Ur is not a warrior, he proposes using battle meditation, all of my Bastille Shan fans know what that is, to bring about the defeat of the Kurek rebels. He and Mehmet Nadil fight in the final battle against the rebellion on Kurek.
Got him, dude.
Using Odin Ur's battle meditation, the Jedi are able to sway the tide in their favor and eventually win, but Odin Ur clearly does not enjoy the experience.
Yeah, he's like, dude, your battle meditation's the shit. He's like, yeah, but this sucks.
Yeah, but people be mad dying. I was literally reading books for the past 20 years, like 15 minutes ago.
I was the lore keeper, now murderer.
Bro, I had a podcast before this. Now I'm like... Never mind, I was going to make a bad, like, relevant joke, but I'm not going to do it.
No, it's not.
Yeah. However, a desperate rebel fires upon Hawk and Tamara's ship, Shadowrunner, killing them.
Oh, no!
Sin. Sorry, Gavin, Jory, get sucked. Following the surrender of the Kurek rebels, they did get Batman, but at least there's two of them. Yeah. Odin Ur despairs the deaths of Hawk and Timar, as well as the others who died in the battle. However, Mehmet reassures him the battle could have been much worse had it not been for his battle attacks. I know this sucks, but it could have been worse.
Yeah, because you came in clutch, dude.
Thanks, Bao. You're really making me feel better about this. Back on Sinagar, Arba informs a distraught Yav and Jori of their parents' deaths, taking pity on the Daragons.
Sorry, your parents are dead as hell.
They're like, oh, our parents are back early. And
this is actually a hut that's not that
Arba's true. Like, nope, they are dead. Taking pity on the Daragons, Arba gives Gav and Jori their parents' ship, the Starbreaker 12, which was previously held as collateral, saying their parents paid for it in blood.
Oh, no.
In the Koro system's unification war alongside Empress Teta. And that's Issue Zero, everybody. So if that sounds interesting to you, stop listening right now, go get the comics and read it. If that doesn't sound interesting to you, let me try and entice you some more with Issue 1.
Yeah, man, dude. This is like, what, maybe... couple years later?
I think it's probably like a couple days. I don't even think it's years.
Gavin and Jory look a little bit older.
I think it was just a change in the art style, honestly.
Maybe.
Like, I was reading the first issue and I was like, oh, this doesn't look too bad. Then I got to the second issue, I was like, what the fuck happened? Like,
Issue Zero probably
Did you guys put like all the effort into Issue Zero? Because the rest of these look like poo.
Now, the thing with the Issue Zeros is even for Dawn of the Jedi, the Issue Zeros always come after the first 5 issues are published because they're like, people have so many questions, let's explain this.
I didn't know how that's how that worked. I thought it was
That's how they work normally. I don't know if it works specifically for these ones, but I know that's how it works normally. Like, they're like, we're confused.
When we read Dawn of the Jedi, their Issue Zero, I was like, this is really good setup information. I'm like, this is really helpful.
Yeah, but
I'm like you would need this like to actually get into these because what the fuck? Because
imagine without it, you'd be fucked.
Well, now that you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, I can see people not liking this because they don't have all the lore
put out in front of them.
They're just reading stuff. They're like, what are these places
Why
and
do they
planets?
Have actual
Where
swords?
Is this? Yeah, what is happening here?
At least they're not plugging them into their legs.
Yeah. While mapping out new hyperspace routes, Gavin Joy Daragon's ship, the Starbreaker 12, is damaged. They take it into Arba's repair dock on Koros Major, and he repairs it, but decides to hold it from them until the repairs have been paid for in full.
Because he's like, you guys keep having money, and you don't give it to me. So
yeah, you guys keep fucking your shit up, and I keep helping you out of the kindness of my heart, and you guys don't repay me.
Yeah, he's actually not like a shitty hut, which I think is cool.
It was actually kind of cool. His whole thing is, oh, don't tell anybody I extended credit.
Yeah.
Tell anybody I was nice.
In one of the later issues, she's like, don't tell them that I gave pity on these orphans, because like, that would be not cool for my rep. Yeah. And the Empress is like, sure, I guess.
Oh, man. Having encountered a series of setbacks, Gavin and Jory have been forced to sell off their family home to pay repairs for their starship. Ooh, sorry, everybody. Just
starship?
Popping fit. You mean I get to go with you and your starship? Meanwhile, one of the merchants, Lord Skahor's drone ships, crashes into the red supergiant Primus Golud while using one of the Daragon's routes. Angered, Cahor takes his lieutenant to Clock. Well, that's what it says. While finding out who approved that route into the Golud corridor in order to exact compensation.
Compensation.
While wandering through the streets of Sinigar, a ragged Jory watches Empress Teta and Jedi Knights Odin Or and Mehmet Nadil traveling on carriage. Mehmet believes that getting the carbonite mines back into production will help make the Koros system one of the richest in the galaxy.
That's in the galaxy.
Why? Odin Or addresses the crowd, telling them that he has come to help secure the Empress's new alliance for the good of the Republic. This is why it makes me think that it's only like a couple days, because he's like, I'm in the club now!
Mm-hmm.
Jory wishes that she and her brother had been Jedi due to their Force sensitivity, but regrets that they lack the patience for that rigorous training.
They're like, fuck that. We want to fly.
Like, we could have been Jedi. We tested really high, but
they're like Han Solo.
We're like a couple of bros.
We tested high with the butterflies.
Yeah, we hang out with the
butts. Midichlorians is pretty high.
We hang with the butts. Arbo's repair and salvage. Gav asks Arbo and he and his sister can have their ship back, almost like he wasn't listening. Arbo reminds them of their debts and disagrees with the siblings' reckless business practices. He's like, yeah, just give us our ship back. We're ready to get paid. And Arbo's like, cool, then pay me. He is later accosted by a pair of bounty hunters who warn him that he and Jory are in trouble with Sisk Cahor over their dangerous hyperspace route. The hunters had managed to track them down by questioning and murdering Shodan Ko of the Hyperspace Navigators Guild.
Oh, no!
Yeah, the guy that fucking put you guys in the guild is dead now.
Shodan Ko?
Well, yeah, that guy that we don't know.
Not the boy.
Poor guy. If only he was in issue zero. Well, feeding on insects of a vindictive Sisk Cahor hires the bounty hunters.
He's the big Trandoshan, like eating stuff.
Yeah, he's the bitch for this issue.
He's the bitch.
And only this issue.
He shows up again later.
No, he doesn't.
He shows up in one issue, like right at the end.
Yeah, this one. Hires the bounty hunters to hunt down and kill Gavin Jory. The bounty hunters catch up with the siblings, but they are able to escape with help from Odin Or and Mehmet Nadil. The Daragon's duck into an alley, and Gav decides to steal back the Starbreaker 12 and go farther than they ever have before.
We're going farther, man. We're
going farther than we ever have before in our starship.
Yeah, they're going someplace cool, man.
They sneak into Araba's dock and do so, but are quickly pursued by Sinigar security forces. Oh, no. Jory punches in random corners, sending the Starbreaker 12 into the unknown.
Yeah, Gav just goes, literally hit all the buttons. We need to go anywhere. And Jory's like, fuck it,
shit. Fuck out of here. Jory's like,
Yeah, and even though it's on issue one.
I'll talk about them all at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to say everything at the end.
Let's go on to Korriban. On the planet Korriban, the ruling Sith lords have opened a new tomb in the Valley of the Dark Lords for the fallen Dark Lord of the Sith, Markaragnos. Ludo Kresh, a powerful Sith lord who wants to secede Lord Ragnos, officiates over his predecessor's funeral. Predecessor's funeral. Markaragnos remains, and several Sith slaves are sealed away inside his tomb.
Horrible.
Very Egyptian.
That was so bad.
It was weird. He's like, goodbye, slaves.
I was like, those poor bastards.
Like, sucks, dude. It was like, you need to tend to me while I'm in here so to make sure my body passes on to... It's Egyptian.
Imagine the last thing you see is a sliver of light going out.
And then you just...
And then the rest of your life, you and the other slaves in darkness.
Until you die.
Yeah, until you're
and
dead.
And if they don't give you a lot of food, you're there for a week and then you die.
Probably eating and drinking the other people.
Nom, nom, nom. Meanwhile, the fugitives Gavin, Jory, Daragon bring their ship Starbreaker 12 out of hyperspace, having picked out their coordinates at random during the fight. During the flight from Koros Major, the twins stumble upon the uncharted world of Korriban. Seeking to make money from their work as hyperspace navigators, they decide to explore Korriban. Following Markaragnos' funeral, Kresh's rival Nagasato, not Nagashadow, which is dumb.
So anybody who thinks it was Nagashadow like us, you're wrong.
It's Nagasato. For some reason.
Maybe it'll become Shadow later.
Maybe. We'll see. Arrives in the Valley of the Dark Lords to contest the leadership of the Sith Empire. Kresh rejects Sato's challenge, deeming his rebellious actions and experiments a threat to the Empire. Kind of true.
It is true.
Sato counters that the Sith Empire has grown stagnant and decadent. Also true. Mm. He reminds the assembled Sith that their dark Jedi ancestors were banished from their beliefs. When I was reading this, I was like, they both bring up really good points. I'm like, it is kind of lame that they're just kind of staying stagnant, but at least they're thriving. And then...
Yeah, Kresh is like, we're here, bro. He's like, we're doing fine. Still good. But Nagasato's like, what if we were better?
Yeah, and it's like, all right, I see both points.
He's like, we've already destroyed all the planets here. I can understand where Sato's coming from, though, because if that's like what you're into, you kind of have to find more shit.
Yeah, get going. Hoping to open a new hyperspace route, Gav convinces his sister Jory that they shall explore Korriban.
That place looks cool.
He's like, there's not weird temples in here with big faces on it. He reminds Jory that they are, he reminds Jory that they are to claim to be emissaries from the Galactic Republic. They don't like that. Pekka and Korriban, Sato and Kresh decide to resolve their rival claims through a vicious sword fight, with neither side able to gain an edge because they're both so good. They're interrupted by the ghost of Marga Ragnos, because of course they are.
Hey, stop!
After recounting the origins of the Sith Empire, he warns that the Sith, that the Empire will soon die if something is not done, which is why Sato wants to fuck off and get stuff.
I will throw this out here real quick. He waited until he died to tell everybody else to do
He was something. Like, we should have done stuff better.
He was like, if only somebody made this better. All right, later, dudes. I'm going back to dying.
He's like, I regret what I did.
Sorry.
He calls upon Kresh and Sato to exercise wisdom and fight the right battles or else everything is lost. And they don't listen.
Nope.
Back on Koros Major, Odon Ur experiences a force vision of an impending Sith attack. He decides to warn Empress Tita and his fellow Jedi Knight, Meetit Nadil.
Meetit.
Meemit, my bad. Mameet. Arriving in the throne room, he finds Arba the Hutt, who's reporting that Gavin and Jory's theft of the Starbreaker 2 has happened to Empress Tita, saying that they have repaid his kindness with treachery and damaged his repair dock. They didn't damage it on purpose.
No, but...
It was attacked by bounty hunters.
Well, no, they did damage it.
I thought
the ship was locked down. They just fucking got in and
I thought the bounty hunters
were
shooting at him, so they had to, like, eat.
No, I think they actually, like, ruined his repair.
Oh, they were just like, fuck
leaving.
This guy.
Because they had it, like, they had the ship locked down. There were dudes, like, holding it down, and they were like, where are you going, man?
Oh, okay.
And they're like, we're leaving.
Bye. Empress Tita promises to deliver justice for Arba. Odon Ur recounts his nightmare to Empress, to the Empress, and Meemit vouches for his fellow Jedi, and Empress promises to raise the matter when she travels to Coruscant in 3 days. Dude, this is...
You guys know that one.
Dude, when we get to Coruscant, it's really cool to see them, like, building it.
That's what I wrote.
I was like, whoa!
I have that in my notes, actually. It's cool.
That's actually dope! Back on Korriban, Sato and Kresh decide to make peace. Not really. They are interrupted by the arrival of Gavin and Jordy.
He doesn't say
Jordy. He does say Jordy.
That's cool.
Jordy, because you got this off of Wikipedia, right?
You keep calling him Gavin, too. I didn't even put these here.
I said Gav and.
Oh, Gav and. I'm like,
yeah, that's
Gavin.
Why it says Gavin. Gav and Jory's ship, Starbreaker 12. Oh, I copied all these.
Yeah, I'm like, you
did. I didn't. This spelled Arbor.
I'm like, I was going in, getting ready. I'm like, all right, another comic. Here we fucking go. and all this shit was in here. I was like, sweet.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure you didn't have that much work to do.
I was like, good sauce.
Because this is like, I was reading this book and I was like, he's going to need to really read this. He can't like do multitask. I'll multitask.
Because
this is like a lot of sauce.
Well, dude, if I was summarizing this, this would have been a nightmare.
It's a lot of sauce. So Jordy and her ship, the Starbreaker 12, after landing, the two announce that they are from the Republic and offer a trade agreement. However, the Sith Masasi warriors grab them and make them prisoners. They're like, fuck. Kresh believes that the Daragons are precursors to an invasion. But Sato,
can I mean one thing? Invasion.
But Sato intends to interrogate them, believing that they are the key to a ripe new fields for the Sith Lords to conquer. And he is correct. Issue 3, hit it up.
He's actually, like, not correct.
Well, he's correct that there's more stuff for them to conquer.
Well, there is, yeah, but...
But he's not correct that they're, like, going to lead him there, because...
They will take me to the Republic,
well,
dude. When Jory gets out of hyperspace... No, I'll save it to the end. I don't want to
ruin... Characters
I'm about to, like, spoil the ending of the comic. We haven't even gotten there
Jory
yet.
Jory and Gav are kind of like shitheads.
They are. I said Gav was a lot like Han. Because it's like, it doesn't matter how much shit he gets into. He's like, it's fine. I'll make it up on the next one. You know I'm good for it. But Jory, they didn't really talk about it too much. But in the first issue, she's like, I wish we weren't so goddamn stupid. And Gav's, and Gav's like, what if we kept being stupid?
That's facts, though. Gav kind of sucks.
Like he's a dummy. She's a dummy, but she clearly doesn't want to be a dummy.
They probably gave Gav a lot of personality because he probably dies in the next volume. like timeline wise.
Either that or Jory was just so boring. They were like, we can't have them both like this.
We can't have them both be boring.
Or maybe they were both stupid at the beginning.
Yeah, or Jory's not a main character and she just like, I'm just going to sit a lot in the background.
Issue 3. Hope you guys are liking this. On the Sith Empire's throne world of Xyos, the Sith Lords debate over what to do with their new prisoners, Gavin, Jory, Darragon.
Darragon.
I love how every
summer... They say Darragon like it's like...
Every summary comes through here, right? And they list out everything again.
Yeah.
Like you didn't just read another summary. I love that. Nagasato argues that they can be used to expand the Sith Empire, but Ludacresh believes they are precursors to an invasion and they should be executed. That was literally like the last paragraph.
He's like, we gotta kill them.
So stupid. Sato argues passionately for an invasion of the Galactic Republic, but is unable to win support from the other Sith
Until
Lords.
Until he fucks shit up.
Yeah, in the end, Seamus, who's just a Sith Lord head in a jar,
dude here.
Goes to Gavin Jory's cold underground prison and informs them that they are to be killed. He has the Sith will decide the disposition of their ship, the Starbreaker 12. The next session, the distraught siblings comfort each other with Jory wishing that they could go home.
She's like, man, this kind of sucks.
I don't want to get murdered by the Sith.
Why do we do this?
I bet you don't. Nagasato does not give up so easily, however. He sends one of his Masasi to retrieve a Republic blaster from the Starbreaker 12. At Nagasato's citadel on the moon Karshian, the Sith Lord resolves to use the Darragons as part of his plot to expand the Sith Empire. He orders his commanders to summon the loyal Masasi, gather weapons, and prepare for attack on Xyos. Sato and his Masasi warriors attack the Xyos prison fortress in secret, killing several guards. Meanwhile, Gav tells his sister Jory that at least their parents accomplished something by delivering a surprise to the Empress during the Unification War.
Not true, they blew up.
They blew up.
They blew up right before they got there.
Yeah, I don't even think they dropped off
They
their
did spells. Not. They literally exploded. Just blew up.
He wishes
I was like,
that,
ooh.
Then he could have had a Force vision about it. Yeah. Been disappointed. We're terrible. I'm terrible. He wishes that he had continued his Jedi training and regrets their bad luck. Jory hears some footsteps. Okay. That sounds like a Han Solo thing. Man, I've been hit with a string of bad luck lately. This sucks. The two are greeted by Nagasato, who tells him that he is here to rescue them. He tells the Darragons to follow his Masasi warriors to the ship. Before leaving, Sato kills Seamus and his servant before leaving the blaster behind to disguise it all as an attack from the Republic. I was laughing my ass off because he's like, Seamus, my boy, the best.
He's like, yo, my dad. Got him.
After bringing Gav and Jory to his fortress in Karshian, Sato heads back to the Sith Council, which is convened in an emergency meeting in response to the attack on the Xyos fortress and the murder of Seamus. Based on planted evidence, Sato claims that Gav and Jory were spies who were serving as the advance guard for a Republic attack.
Oh, no. But then he lets them join his team anyway.
He's like, these are my boys. Exploiting the outrage from the apparent Republic incursion, Sato demands to be crowned Dark Lord so he can defend the Empire from the
stuff.
I would be so much better if I was Dark Lord.
Much to the chagrin. That's how you spell that word?
Chagrin. Yeah, much to the chagrin of Ludacresh, the Sith Lords agree, and Sato is named the new Dark Lord of the Sith. They also pledge their ships and factions to their new Dark Lord.
Oh, no.
Do you want me to just keep going?
Nah, I got issue 4.
Gotcha.
On Xyos, in issue 4, the new Dark Lord of the Sith, Nagasato, receives his marks on his forehead from 2 Sith pincer bugs.
You just bite him.
Like, nom, nom, nom. Meanwhile, Empress Tita goes to Odon-Ur and Merit Nadil to Coruscant, which is cool, to address the Senate on Odon-Ur's recent vision. The Senate seems completely unconvinced because they're like, what the fuck? But Teton back. Like, what?
The Dark Lords and the Sith from years ago are coming to kill us. And everyone's like, we have real problems. Like, people aren't being fed.
He's like, what? But Tita vows to strengthen at least the Koros system's army. Elsewhere at Nagasato's Karshian Citadel, the Force-sensitive Gav Dargon uses the Sith amulet to conjure up illusions. Sato compliments Darragon, telling the young human that he has a potential and that Sith magic that he learns will be a powerful ally in the coming struggle. He tells Gav to learn to become adept with Sith magic if he wants to get home safely.
It has to be an order, correct?
Probably. If he wants to be home safely. Sato puts the next stage of his plan into action by sending his loyal Masasi warriors to infiltrate Xyos and steal the Stormbreaker 12. The Dark Lord then travels to his decoy fortress on the nearby planet of Cardalba, where Jari Dargon is Dargon is being held. When Jory asks when she can see her brother, Sato claims he is protecting them since they both are still under the execution order. When Jory tells Sato that she needs her ship back, he reassures her that she has already made some extreme arrangements. He's like, you're going to get your ship back because we're going to have people steal it.
That sounds dirty.
On Xyos, Sato's Masasi warriors infiltrate the Stormbreaker 12's impound hangar and kill Ludacris' guards. Before escaping on Stormbreaker 12, they purposely leave behind Nagasato's emblem, which Ludacris soon discovers. Realizing that Sato has staged a false flag attack in order to seize power, Kresh calls together his fellow Sith lords, Horak Mul and Dorgal Ram.
Sure.
Huh? Oh, sure, yeah.
Just sure.
You're repronouncing one of my names. Demanding an attack on Sada's fortress. Several days later, Sada returns to Jori on Kar Delba. He brings a hologram message of her brother Gav, who tells her that Sada has taught him to use the Force powers in a different way, and that Sada hasn't made arrangements for them to return to the Galactic Republic.
Does that mean he's gay?
Maybe. Maybe Gav is just, you know, one little line away. Sada then... He just needs Naga Shadow. Sada then shows Jori the Stormbreaker 12, which has been recovered. He tells her that she is free to go home and escape from this nightmare. But Jori can leave... before Jori can leave, Crush's fleet, led by Horak Mull and Gal Ram, attacks the Icy World. Jori panics and says that they have to go get to cover. Sada, however, is not worried, and he's got some shit to fuck it up.
I just want to take a minute to allow our listeners to decide if this sounds interesting to them yet.
It's not bad. It's obviously such a setup.
It really is. It's a huge setup piece. And that's why it's so hard to... I think it's harder to get into it if you're not reading it, you know?
I think we'll get back in... I think we'll, when we read the next volume, we'll be like, oh man, Golden Age of the Sith was actually really cool because it sets all this stuff up and it gives us more depth on these characters.
I hope, man, because Gavin Jory got me like, what?
Dude, when I was reading the first volume of Dawn of the Jedi, I was like, this is cool, but there's a lot of weird shit. And then volume two, I was like, I'm in.
Yeah, the second one was definitely so hopefully like this one
gets us back in.
I would imagine it would if they went on to make like more of them anyway. So
there's like 9 volumes in the Tales of the Jedi that kind of all lead into this, and then they lead to the Old Republic.
Alrighty.
Issue 5.
Here we go, boys and girls. This is
boys
the ending.
And boys.
Rather underwhelming ending. As Ludo Crush's as Ludo Crush's forces continue attacking Nagasato's decoy fortress on Kar Delba, Horak Mall and Dorgal Rama are confident of victory. As Sato's defenders exchange fire with Crush's forces, Sato tells Jori Daragon to leave and head back to the Galactic Republic. Jori is reluctant to leave her brother Gab Daragon behind.
She's like, bruh.
But I love how we said it every time, the Daragon word. You don't have to. People know who Jori and Gav are at this point, but we're just going to keep saying it. Behind Sato,
because we're reading a script,
convinces her that she has to flee because they are being attacked by a treacherous Sith Lord who will torture her into revealing information about the Republic.
And who's that?
It's Crash. In truth, Sato wants to use her ship as a beacon to lead the Sith invasion forces into the Republic. Right. You guys remember episode 9? It's that.
Yeah,
That's Luke's ship. Oh, it's got to be Rey. We'll just follow her. Bet. Meanwhile, at Nagasato's citadel on Kar Shion, Gav is kept in the dark about Sato's plans and comes to question his role as the Sith Lord's trusted advisor and companion.
Yeah, he's like, dude, if you don't trust me to do stuff, why am I here? And he's like, because you're just a decoy.
He's like, why are you teaching me dark side if you're not going to dark side me out, boy?
Basically.
Dap me up, son. He hopes that the Sith Lord knows what he is doing. I hope you know what you're doing. You're like a dark Lord of the Sith.
He's like,
all
you just started a war. I hope you know what you're doing.
I just flew my ship into random hyperspace coordinates away from bounty hunters, but I hope you know what you're doing. And he hopes that Jori is alright. Flying the Starbreaker 12, Jori, she fucking flies away. She gets out.
She lays to the left and dodges.
Yeah, she dips. She goes to hyperspace
flies
and bounces.
Casually.
Suddenly, a massive fleet of warships arrives from Nagasato's true fortress on Kar Shion. Sato reveals that his fortress on Kar Delba was just a decoy. Are you confused yet? He pushes
double
a button,
decoys.
And the Masasi on Horak Mul's ship kill the Sith Lord. Masasi on Dolgor Ram's ship do the same, and the Kar Shion fleet opens fire on Ludo.
Dude, basically, he goes, it's a decoy, and also all your guards are actually mine, and they just stab them.
What if you got sucked, bro?
I'm like, whoa!
It's like, damn, dude. Crush retreats, leaving his rival the victor of the Battle of Kar Delba via forfeit. I didn't realize that he actually survived. That could open up a thing where
it's probably in the next volume.
Crush will come and probably show up to the Republic and be like, "You're a Sith guy." He'll be like, "Yeah, but I'm like not that bad." I was bad like 20 minutes ago. But now,
because Empress Tita is supposed to like be like this unifying force in the Tales of the Jedi series, and she's like in like two issues.
We'll see. We'll see what happens with her.
We'll see. We'll keep going.
She's Jedi. Super Jedi.
Jedi.
Back on Kar Shion, Gav reflects on his new Sith skills, having learned to monitor the battle from afar. That's what was happening? Okay.
Yeah.
He is relieved to learn that Jori has escaped from the Starbreaker 12, having defeated his rival Crush for now. Sato issues orders for the other Sith Lords to prepare their ship for an invasion of the Republic, using Jori's ship as a beacon.
Order 66.
Meanwhile, in the Starbreaker 12, Jori vows to find help for her brother Gav when she gets home. A tracking beacon beeps as Jori unknowingly leads the Sith Empire straight into the Republic.
Bum, bum,
theory,
bum.
She is going to join the Jedi because Gav isn't going to show up right
and
away.
He's going to be Sith.
And he's going to be on the Sith. And they're going to fight, and one of them's going to die.
Exactly. I told you, man.
That's the whole thing.
Okay. We got it. Not a prediction, fact.
Podcast notes.
What you got for notes, man?
Let's jump in. Do you have anything?
I never have notes because I just kind of react.
Just vibe. Got you.
All right. I find it easier to just riff.
So, first note. Dawn of the Jedi. That was the other thing we covered. It was set in 25,793 BBY, placing this story approximately 20,793 years after the events of
Thank
that
Thank you for
one.
Doing the math.
Yes, had to do it. KOTOR takes place in 3,956 BBY, placing this story about 1,044 years prior to the events of that.
Nice.
I thought that would be interesting for anybody who cares about those things.
We'll get more into it.
Odin Ur's master Uru, he looks like a brain in a tank.
Yeah, I think he is.
That was real weird. He
looks like Krang from TMNT.
For Odin Ur, I summed up his character as, he doesn't like to do shit, he just wants to read scrolls and vibe. I mean, kind of facts.
Yeah.
The comic claims the Sith began with dark Jedi using their power to subjugate the weak. That's something that's kind of fucked, because the Jedi were taught not to do that, and then they got out there and they were like, we're just going
to
do that.
Well, High Republic is supposed to get them back on track.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That's
well, and that's
years. Arba the Hutt issues a line of credit to Huck and Tamar and doesn't want others to hear Hutt did that. That's funny. It's funny Hutt humor. They say Emperor Terra's crack troopers. What's a crack trooper?
It's a trooper
what
that's
the heck
on
is that?
Crack?
That's what I said.
I think it's like a crack shot.
I think it's a drugged up crack guy.
I think it's
that's just like
crack
how it
shot.
Is. Odin Ur speaks of battle meditation, which is something I talked about before. It's force power that can rally the side of one side to make them stronger as they than they'd be otherwise, and inspires fear in their enemies. Bastila Shan uses this ability during the time of the Old Republic to help secure multiple victories against the Sith Empire.
Qui-Gon uses it?
No, he does not.
Who else uses battle meditation?
If Qui-Gon used this, they probably would have won.
Battle meditation. Who else does that?
Bastila Shan.
That's it?
Yep.
I thought someone else did it.
As far as I know, it's just her.
Hmm.
I think... Well, I guess she would have come out after, so it would have been introduced in something else. I don't know who would use it then.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you could look that up while I continue to read this stuff. So in issue one, Gav and Jory, they're hyperspace explorers. This is a sick concept, something that we'd never seen before, because in the Star Wars we're used to, hyperspace is just a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we'll just follow the hyperspace routes, so that's it. I like the idea that hyperspace explorers are akin to smugglers in the sense they risk their lives for profits and they make deals with the more shady aliens in the Star Wars universe to make their money.
Yeah.
Even the fact that a bad hyperspace route got approved by them, they don't care what happens to the ships using their unsafe routes as long as they just get paid.
Nice.
It's a cool concept, man.
Gotta love it.
You do gotta love it, because they're just the shitheads of the galaxy. More so Gav. Jory seems to wallow in what could have been versus what is, whereas Gav is more focused on the now.
Oh, it shows up in a lot of the Dark Horse books.
Okay,
that's like a fuck ton of Dark Horse books. It's like, we use battle meditation because, like, we made it.
We like it.
Yeah.
While watching Empress Teta parade through the streets with her Jedi envoy, Jory notes both she and Gav tested high with force potential, but lack the patience to go in that direction. She sighs and calls this another bad decision. I thought that was fucking hilarious, because it's like all they seem to do is make bad decisions.
Yeah.
While Jory dwells on the siblings' poor choices, yeah, this is literally her watching the thing, Gav continues trying to convince Arbor to give the ship back.
They're not good.
He's like, yeah, just give me the ship, it's cool. They seemingly have very different wants, which is also leading me to believe that Jory is going to be like, we have to fight for the light, and Gav's going to be like, but they gave us power, they made us something.
That kind of sucks.
Like, Naga, he turned us into something. He gave me the ability to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you want to work with him? Yeah, this was another thing that wasn't mentioned in the synopsis. The Jedi seem to plug their, like, swords or sabers or whatever into, like, a receptacle that's attached to their side. These things might hold force power or kyber crystal or something.
We don't know yet.
Really unclear. Maybe they'll go into that in the next one.
But, eventually.
We did both think it was weird. All right, my notes on issue two. The Sith lock slaves away with their dead. Yeah, that was terrible.
It's Egyptian stuff, man.
I can appreciate Nagasato's stance on the matter. He doesn't want his power and lineage to fade into obscurity, because obviously he was, they mentioned it in the comic, he's one of the pure blood dark Jedi.
They never
with the Sith or whatever. So he's like, I feel like my lineage means something here. I can't just fade into obscurity and be happy with what I have. I have to kick ass and be dope.
Yeah, he's like, this is something that we need to do better.
Yeah, exactly. The Sith fight with normal swords that they channel force through for extra power.
Is that the thing that they plug into the little buckets?
It looked like they had normal swords and they were just channeling force lightning through them.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. It's cool, the Sith, we know them, are a combination of interbred Jedi with the Sith race and pureblood Jedi descendants. It's always dope to get more information on those guys.
If only it was, you're right.
Marka Ragnos tells both Nagasato and Ludo Kresh to fight the right battle, basically foreshadowing the events that would one day lead to the rule of two being put into place.
Yep.
Downfall of the Sith is when they let their hunger for power overtake their desire to prosper together.
Which is always.
So Ludo Kresh, technically, probably would have had the Sith prosper for longer.
Probably, because Ludo Kresh, like, knows things.
He was like, we can just hang, bro.
And
he's like, we have more than enough resources to just vibe. But Naga's like, but what if we have more?
I've had more power.
I love how the two Sith Lords are ready to kill each other and possibly wipe out the concept of Dark Jedi, but then Gavin Jory showing up gave them something else to turn their attention to. Mm-hmm. These siblings literally changed the entire course of the galaxy looking for a quick buck.
Yeah, dude. that's Star Wars.
I'm like, that's hilarious.
That's Star Wars if I ever heard it.
And Gav, he just doesn't seem to consider the consequences of doing anything. He's always so arrogant and says that things will just be okay. Jory's like, are you sure about this? He's like, fuck it, just do it. He's like, it'll be fine. Who cares? Issue 3, Zyost is apparently the place where Dark Lords and Sith conduct their business and organizes their empire. Business. I'd never heard about this place prior to this, so that was cool for me.
I think it's been in, I think it was in the Darth Bane stuff.
Very real possibility. I didn't know about this, so I was like, that's cool. That's something that we could put in our game.
Yeah.
Welcome to Zyost.
We'll go to Zyost, baby. If it doesn't get blown up by the end of this. I gotta look into the planet.
we gotta look.
They might blow up the planet.
They don't got Death Stars at this time, or, Star Destroyers with mega lasers on them. Facts. The Sith are so openly in disdain of the Republic due to the way the Jedi of the Light were taken in and propped up by them. They're like, fuck these guys. Seamus uses the dark side to keep himself alive as a head in a jar. That's baller. That's fucking just straight up. You don't mess with a guy who puts his head in a jar.
You don't mess with Scott Lang.
Until you blow up his jar and then he's dead. Even when imprisoned by the Sith, Gav just looks at this as a bad day.
He's like, this sucks.
At least Jory has some sense.
Hope will be alive.
Yeah, but Jory has some sense of gravitas as to how bad. She's like, we're gonna die. Yeah. And Gav's like, this could have been better.
He's like, yeah, next time.
He's like, maybe next time we'll win. She's like, we're going to die.
At least we'll be with mom and dad.
Whatever. Yeah, sounds good, dude. Nagasato is cool. His plan to pin the deaths of the other Sith on the escaped prisoners is a great way to inspire the others to want to take the fight to the Republic. Mm-hmm. And then it panned out. I'd written these notes as I was going through each issue, that's why.
Yeah.
That's why this is the way it is. Hilarious. So Nagasato kills Seamus, right?
Yeah.
And then when they're all in the, when they're all in the meeting after the fact discussing the attack on the base, one of the Sith brings Seamus' head in a bag, and he's like, they killed Seamus!
Yeah, and he's like, my master, no!
He's had me laughing my ass off, and Nagasato goes on to talk about how Seamus was his mentor and how he was so noble and wise, but he totally fucking killed him. Yeah. I was laughing my ass off, and this dude just rolls up with like a burlap sack, and he's like, fucking Seamus is dead! I'm like,
put him in a bag!
I'm like, why didn't you put him in a bag? Why didn't you put him in like a nice jar?
It's fucking stupid, dude.
Would you like, don't you have like a replacement jar for him or something? I mean, come on.
Replacement jar.
Yeah.
Get him a fishbowl. He'll survive probably.
Yeah, dump him into something else so that it doesn't look so terrible.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see Nagasato let Ludo Kresh and his followers go after the Sith Council elects the former Lord of the Sith. Because
they have to.
I was figured he would have been like, ride or die!
Because Ludo Kresh is in the other book.
Yeah. Well, obviously he had this whole like stupid plan going on in the back, but I thought that Naga was just going to be like, yeah, you're not on my side, you're dead. Issue 4. We're almost done. I don't have like any. I have one note for issue 5, so we're almost done. Coruscant is around during this time, but we get to see a few panels of the building still being constructed. It's cool to think the city covering the entire planet is thousands of years old, and over time they just kept building more new city on top of the old city.
They just keep going.
It's sick.
Coruscant is a bunch of city-states.
Yeah.
Like, all stacked on top of each other.
You just see a bunch of fucking pyramids and buildings and shit just being built.
Imagine if Rome just kept stacking.
Dude, I want a canon Coruscant.
Like novel?
Like during the time of Force War. I'm going to see what that looks like.
Oh, probably.
Is it even city yet?
It's probably like a village. It's literally Rome.
Because they're like, the city of Coruscant's thousands of years old. It's like, we see them building it here, but we didn't get to see very much of it. Mm-hmm. Wonder what that would look like. Empress Teta makes a plea for the Republic to help against the Sith Lords, and they're all like, please, we have real problems. Take your threats of Dark Jedi that want to take over the galaxy and go somewhere else.
They're like, what? No thanks.
They're like, this has nothing to do with us. We just don't care.
Our people are starving and dying, and you're sitting here like, bruh.
So Naga's having Gav learn dark side techniques. Thought that was a cool development at the time of reading, and Naga's manipulation of the twins is turning out to be a better story than I originally thought.
That's cool.
But it sucks that issue 5 just says, fuck it, we're not doing that right now.
Well, it's because they gotta continue it in the later stuff.
Issue 5 ended on a relatively flat note because Naga gains complete control of the Sith and tracks Jory back to the Republic, but Gav doesn't get much in the way of an ending here, but I am looking forward to what comes next.
Yeah, so am I.
And that
this is a good precursor.
If I can wrap up my entire thoughts about this, it was okay, but I'm really excited for what's coming next.
Yeah.
I think what's coming next could be actually really cool.
Because I like a lot of the precursor stuff. Like, reading issue 0 in the Dawn of the Jedi thing was kind of cool, because I was like, we're going to learn about all this, like, on the page. That's going to be dope. I'm just glad we have background knowledge. Yeah, it's a bit of a sink to read a lore page. And that's why this issue 0, even though it was done 20 years ago.
That's what I was expecting when I opened this up. I was like, okay, it's just going to be another lore dump.
But it's actually like an issue with some lore.
It's like a real comic issue.
There's like two pages of lore dumps. And then it's like, but it's like half an issue. I think it's 16 pages instead of 22.
Yeah, it's not a full size.
No, it's a little boy.
Yeah, I remember you were standing at my cube. I was like, They're short. And you were like, this is issue zero. I was like, fuck.
You're like, damn it. They got it at five.
I'm like, why can't they all be like this?
Yeah, why can't they all be 10 pages?
Why can't they all be 10 pages of Nagasato being like, I'm the winner.
I am the winner of the stuff. And so I'm excited for what comes next, especially with the Tales of the Jedi stuff, because I hear the Tales of the Jedi is like really, really good content.
Mm-hmm.
People really like it, and they hated that that everything gets decanonized. But then again, we all hate that it gets decanonized. It's kind of butt cheeks. So, anything you got to say about the rest of the stuff, or you just want to close it out?
No, I think that I pretty much covered everything I wanted to say. Forward to the next bit.
I'm definitely looking forward to reading the next bit. I can't wait till I can one day own everything on a shelf.
I hope our listeners thought that this episode was somewhat entertaining. I know we just kind of ran through a lot of the plot points, and then we didn't really have very much discussion in this one, but it's hard when you're doing these comics that are about shit that nobody understands, yeah. And if they don't have a visual reference, they're just listening to us talk about gobbledygook.
It's easier for us to talk about the canon stuff like Obi and Anakin because like everybody knows what we're talking about.
When we're talking about Son of Dathomir and we're like, Darth Maul versus General Grievous and Count Dooku on Dathomir, most of you are going to be like, okay, I know what that looks like.
That makes sense.
I know who all these characters are. I know exactly like what this place looks like that they're in.
A lot easier.
Right now we're just talking about dumb shit.
Yeah, right now we're talking about Gav and Jory Darragon hanging out on Korriban, which half of you probably doesn't even know is also Moriban. What the fuck?
Korriban, Moriban, Shlingoriban.
Dude, I'm going there. I don't know what that last place is, but I'm going there.
Shmoriban?
Shmoriban.
All right, guys, thank you for listening. You can follow the podcast at The Farthest Galaxy on Instagram to keep up to date with the episodes as they release and what we will be covering. You can follow me, Hunter, at Hunter_VanLirup. I forgot to change it in the doc. Mm-hmm. And Alex at The Dude Kenobi. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your Force-sensitive friends.
Yeah, and can we have our ship back?
Maybe.
Do we gotta pay? Just give it to us.
No.
Come on.
Hey, Andy! Money, please! Republic Credit is no good here!